Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings. Happy day after Thanksgiving. Black Friday? My friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Shabbat Shalom, TGIF, Juma Mubarak. Now, whatever it may be for you, it's the end of the week. Hopefully it's the end of my having the flu. I was really sick yesterday. And so my apologies if you hear any remnant of it in my voice today. I'm living on Robitussin and garlic capsules, but they seem to be doing their job. So here we are live on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary is going to spend our third hour with us. For the people watching on Tom Vision on our live video stream, which you can find over at tomhartman.com, there's a link directly to it. It's a little harder to find from the Air America website, but that's actually where it originates. If you go to airamerica.com, you can track it down. And Peter will be dropping by and taking your calls and answering in song. It should be interesting. He's here in Portland for a gig. We'll tell you about that. And Mark Begich, in our second hour, the newest addition to the United States Senate, is going to drop by at the third segment of the second hour for a short hello and thank you and all that sort of thing. Good to talk to Mark. We all worked to make sure that he got elected. But it being Friday, Senator Bernie Sanders with us for our national town hall meeting that we have every Friday in this program, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, not a Democrat, not a Republican. When he was in the House of Representatives, he was the longest serving independent in the history, in the 230 plus year history of that body. And I think of him as America's senator. His website is sanders.senate.gov. And Bernie, I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Well, I did, Tom, and it's good to be with you. And I've got a cold as well, so the listeners are going to be getting it from both ends.
Okay. Well,
we think it's not contagious over the airwaves, right?
There you go. Yeah, so don't be afraid to call in. Our toll-free number, 866-303-2270. And after the first break, Bernie will be taking your calls, as he does every Friday. Bernie, there's a lot going on in the world. I'm just curious, you know, what your take is on what do you want to talk about today? What's up?
Well, Congress is going to reconvene on the 8th for a short period of time. And we're going to begin the process of laying the groundwork for a major, major stimulus package. And that's a big deal. We now have the opportunity to start rebuilding this country, developing an economic recovery program that can improve the lives of millions of people. And I hope everybody is thinking about the issue here, because the question is, how do we create decent-paying jobs as quickly as possible while we address many of the unmet needs facing our country? So this is an issue that my office is working on very hard. Clearly, we want to rebuild our infrastructure, and that's our roads and our bridges and our water systems. We need to move into public transportation. In my state of Vermont, in rural areas, it's very hard for people to get to work, even get to a grocery store, without an automobile. Can we put people to work building buses as we improve rural transportation? Then we have a rail system, which is in desperate need, both in terms of cargo and freight, as well as passenger service. That's a whole issue. And I think, correctly, Barack Obama has also been talking about, as many of us have been, about the absolute necessity, absolute need of moving away from foreign oil, from fossil fuels, to energy independence, to energy efficiency, and to sustainable energy. And if we do that, Tom, we can create millions of good-paying jobs in that direction as well. Some of us also, in terms of the stimulus package, taking a hard look at disease prevention, primary health care, we think we can make some progress there as well. We also want to make sure that in the serious economic times that we're now facing, with unemployment going up, with people losing their retirement savings, that we pay a lot of attention to the people who have been hurt the hardest and make sure that nobody in America goes cold. Nobody in America is sleeping out on the street. We've got to address that as well. So that's one whole area that's a big deal out there.
Yeah.
It's creating a stimulus package that addresses the real unmet needs of this country and creates jobs. Second issue, big issue, and I'm sure there are a lot of differences of opinion on it on our listening audience, is what do we do about Detroit? What do we do about the automobile industry? And where I'm coming down from is, on one hand, I think it would be a disaster for this country to allow the major automobile manufacturers to disappear. It would be mean at a tough economic time in our country, the loss of millions more jobs, and also undermine our manufacturing capabilities to an even greater degree than they've been undermined up to now. On the other hand, it does not make a lot of sense to me to give $25 billion or whatever to these same guys who have been running these companies in a disastrous way without making sure that there are going to be fundamental changes in the way they do business. So that's where we are with regard to that. And last but not least issue that we're going to be dealing with is this whole financial crisis. I've been dismayed that there hasn't been enough discussion about who caused this problem. You know, these guys at the heads of banks, whether it's the savings and loan bailout, the Asian crisis we had, or the current terrible crisis, they are responsible for so much damage through their greed and irresponsibility that it is literally beyond comprehension. We're talking now about $5, $6 trillion being placed at risk because of their irresponsible behavior. Can you believe that?
Yeah, no, it's truly mind-boggling. And Bernie, Ravi Batra is a professor of economics at Southern Methodist University, a New York Times international best-selling author of a number of books, including Greenspan's Fraud, which you would love. And he's a regular on our show. He comes on and very often does an hour right after you. And he has this very simple equation that he says, you know, everybody always understood until Reagan came along, and then somehow we all got amnesia about it, that the economy, all economies, run on supply and demand. And demand is caused by wages, period, end of discussion. And supply is caused by productivity, people making things, people producing things. And that wages and productivity historically have tracked each other from the founding of our country up until the 1980s. As productivity went up, wages went up. But starting in the 1980s, when Reagan started his war on organized labor and on the working people, productivity continued to increase, but wages did not. And as a result, to fill that gap that was created, people started using debt to in other words, debt filled that demand, created demand. Now debt is no longer available to people to create demand, and thus we have this crash. And so he says the easy solution, you know, if you give people a $500 check, for example, yes, it's going to stimulate the economy for a short time because it simulates wages. It has the effect, you know,
right,
the apparent effect of increasing wages, but it doesn't because it's a short-term fix.
Right.
The real long-term fix is to dramatically increase the minimum wage to like $14, $15, $17 an hour in Denmark, for example, the equivalent. And to have unionization and to have trade policies that make it very difficult for companies to ship manufacturing overseas.
Tom, I agree with that. And where we're at right now, I think, and I hope, is that the American people will take a very, very hard look at the disastrous right-wing economic ideology peddled, you know, by folks like Milton Friedman and Alan Greenspan and Reagan and Bush and all these guys. And it is not just the deregulation, which has caused the current financial crisis at a cost that literally is unbelievable. I think nobody can get their arms around what $5 or $6 trillion at risk means.
Yeah, it's a third to a half of our entire GDP.
Right. I mean, it's just incomprehensible. But it's not just that. We have to take a hard look at this unfettered free trade policy, which has run up a huge trade deficit, has cost us millions of good-paying jobs. I mean, it's no secret to anybody who's listening that when you go to a store, it's Christmas time, and you're going to go shopping, and you pick up an item, you assume that it's made in China, that it's not made in the United States. How long can we be a strong and great economy if we're not producing the goods that we need? And it's tax breaks and the trickle-down economic theory that somehow if you give tax breaks to the very, very richest people, this is going to stimulate the economy. And it's this anti-unionism that you talked about a moment ago. So right-wing economic ideology, which has done what it was supposed to do, and that is make the very richest people in our country richer. It has created the most unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth. It has led to the collapse of the middle class, to an increase in poverty, to more and more people without health insurance, people without pensions. And that's where we are today.
Yeah, very much so. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Both of us fight you off a bit of a cold here, but we are on the air live on the day after Thanksgiving. 16 minutes past the hour. I see the board is lit up. We will be taking calls for Senator Sanders. Senator Sanders will be taking your calls right after the break. You can drop into our live chat room at TomHartmann.com. Pick up our free live video stream, free live chat room at AirAmerica.com as well. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Go to Teamster, singular, Teamster.org for more information. And our Brunch with Bernie hour, Sanders.Senate.gov, is Bernie's website. He's got a great newsletter over there you can subscribe to and get it in email periodically and always find information. And Bernie taking our calls. Are you still with us there, Bernie?
I'm right here.
Okay, well that line sounds a little better. We tried to get a little better sounding phone line.
Okay.
A bad connection last time. All righty, let's pick up some calls here. Rob in Mount Nair, Minnesota?
Mount Nair in Minnesota. How you doing
Mount
today,
Nair.
Tom? It's where you were sick yesterday. I'm sorry to hear about that. I hope you had a good vacation, Mr. Sanders. Nice to talk to you. I have to be able to toss it out there. It's where I don't believe in conspiracy theories, but after you see things happen over and over and over again, it's where I got a comment and then I need a question answered. Late 80s, Latin American banks lend too much money to Latin American countries, can't repay it. During Reagan, Bush 1 has to do a bailout. Late 90s, it comes down to a point where East Asian crisis finally comes down to financial things. Now it's down to a point where late 2010s, it's where, guess what? You know, I mean, we're having the same thing happen again. Are these bankers setting us up to fall all the time and only have the government come along to be able to take and bail them out? Is this all planned?
Well, Rob, you've asked a good question. I don't know that it's planned. I don't think it's planned. But what I think you do have is the incredible situation that when things are going good for these guys, they are making huge sums of money. I think everybody understands that Wall Street in the last number of years these guys have made out like bandits. You have hedge fund people who have made billions of dollars in a short period of time. They take a whole lot of risk. They bring in huge returns. Everything is fine until they overreach and then the system collapses and then we have to bail them out. So you have a situation where we socialize the losses and they privatize the gains. It's called capitalism for the very for the ordinary people and socialism for the very, very rich. So I don't know that it's a conspiracy, but I think this is an issue, and you're right. I mean, this is not just now. It was the Latin American crisis. It was the Asian crisis. Every few years, these guys overextend.
It's like the SNL crisis, too.
Pardon me?
The SNL thing, too, where George Bush's brother, I forget which brother he had, who Silverado Savings and Loan, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right. Yeah. All right, and I mean, the question is, can we afford this financial system? But I think Rob raises the right question. We have to take a hard look at it. And what bothers me and worries me very much, Tom, is I think there's much too little discussion about how we got into these things and making sure that we don't continue this cycle. I could tell you, when we talk about too big to fail, if you think that the Bank of America, which is absorbing more and more entities, is ever going to be allowed to fail, you'd be wrong. And we have to take a very hard look right now, today, and breaking up these huge entities so we're never placed in a position of having to bail them out again. But Rob raises an interesting question. This is not the first time this has happened, and these guys have done just had a disastrous impact on not only on our economy, but the lives of billions of people.
Well, and on top of that, there's a $140 billion tax break built into this bailout so that when banks get this money, if they use the money to buy other banks to become even bigger in the category of too big.
No, that's right. It wasn't built. By the way, Tom, that wasn't built into the bailout. That was what our friend Mr. Paulson decided to do on his own.
You're right. I'm sorry. It was the administration that did it, not Congress.
We have introduced legislation to repeal that.
Good.
But the idea that in the midst of all of this stuff, suddenly Paulson changes a rule which will give $140 billion tax breaks to these large banks that absorb smaller banks. It's literally beyond comprehension.
Yeah. Chris in Los Angeles, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning. That was Neil Bush for Silverado.
Saying, Neil, thank you. Yes.
And America, how is that deregulation working for you? Anyway, this is Chris, the longshore maritime clerk. And this every year for the last 11 years, we've in Wilmington, California, the ILWU has fed 1,500 needy families a 70-pound basket of food with turkey and all the trimmings. And each basket would feed 10 people. Well, you figure that would feed 15,000 people. Every year we've done this, never had any media coverage. And we did have a newspaper show up this past Tuesday. And what they said in the newspaper was speakers spoke and the program continued. The speakers were Laura Richardson, Loretta Sanchez, Assemblywoman Bonnie Lowenthal, and L.A. Councilwoman Janice Hahn. But the newspaper referred to them as speakers. I'm telling you, there's been a consistent, attacking of unions in this country. Now, Tom, I really appreciate Clear Channel for allowing you to say the things you said about unions. And,
yeah.
You know, it's wonderful.
Thank you,
but,
Chris.
But what can we do about this, Senator Sanders?
We'll have to pick that that answer up on the other side of the break because we do have the tyranny of the clock. This is it's purely a coincidence, Chris. It's the bottom of the hour. Thanks a lot for the call. And we'll let Bernie respond to why labor is getting so little coverage in the press when everybody's worried about corporate America's health. Right after this, Bernie Sanders with us. Approach with Bernie and Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
With a mighty host, I live and sing. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio.
Turn your radio on.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, taking back the corporate media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. 1-3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific, or as it appears on your radio. 34 minutes past the hour. It's our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And Bernie, we ended the last segment with a question.
Yeah, Chris asked the question about why unions get so little coverage. I think, Tom, most listeners understand that you don't bring about change in this country unless people stand together. If there's a lesson to be learned from Barack Obama's brilliant campaign for president, is that he organized millions and millions of people, tremendous grassroots organization, and he won. And on economic matters, the situation is exactly the same. Unless working people stand together and are able to negotiate contracts collectively, they're not going to do well. And they're not going to have the political voice that they need unless they are organized. So you constantly see just incredibly vicious attacks on unions because they are the major threat to corporate America and the big money interests. Now, we are dealing with a very, very important piece of legislation. It hasn't gotten as much attention that it deserves. It's called the Employee Free Choice Act. And what that is about is an understanding that right now in our country, millions of American workers want to join a union, but they can't do it. Because when workers try to organize, their organizers get fired, and the labor negotiations stall out without a first contract ever being written. And that all of the advantages now through the National Labor Relations Board rests with the employer and the big money interests. And we're going to try to rectify that through the Employee Free Choice Act, which would make it easier for workers to join unions. And this will be important not only for those workers who enter unions, but for everybody else, because as we drive wages up, everybody is going to benefit from that. So this is a very, very big deal, and I hope we can get to it in the next few months.
That's the ultimate stimulus package, is simply to increase wages.
That's right.
Eddie in Greenfield, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. Eddie?
Hello, Bernie.
Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Bernie. I'm a great supporter of yours. I'm here in Western Mass, and I appreciate you very much. I hope you get well soon. But I want to talk about railroads. Now, you're the only guy on the talk shows that I've heard even mention railroads. And if we want to get these auto workers back to work, we can build a world-class rail system, passenger rail system in America, like no other in any other country. In France, they got trains that can go 300 miles an hour. You know, and we're looking at a broken down railroad system here that's been privatized and just torn apart. I can remember when I was a kid, I could hop a train, go south, north to all the way to the Canadian border. I could travel to my, towns and do shopping and hop on a train and come back home without ever driving my car.
That's right.
We need that now. And I hope you would put a bug in Obama's ear and tell him, hey, railroads, let's build a railroad system. We'll put these guys to work.
Eddie, I think you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
And it's not only important for the moving of cargo, for the moving of passengers, but if we're serious in cutting back on greenhouse gas emissions and breaking our dependence on automobiles, we need that rail system. You're absolutely right, and it is an issue. I know a number of other members of the Senate will be focusing on.
Yeah, I love those CSX ads that point out that they can transport a ton of freight over 400 miles in 1 gallon of diesel fuel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the efficiency of this. And every major China now has maglev cars.
That's right.
Trains. I mean, they've got trains that run 200-300 miles an hour on, you know, maglev.
That is, Eddie said, you know, our Amtrak system is underfunded and many serious problems. Now, we've got to turn that around. It's absolutely imperative.
Amen. Carol in Mesa, Arizona, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. As you're aware, Bush has been signing some really horribly outrageous proclamations, whatever they call them, especially anti-environmental ones. I've heard they can be undone by something called the Congressional Review Act, which means needing only a simple majority to pass. Do you know whether it's the present Congress or the incoming Congress must do that? And if it's this Congress, please make them do it, have them do it before adjournment of the special session that you're going to have. Some of these aren't even publicly known, and I don't know how to get them revealed. Get well and happy holidays, both of you.
Okay, thank you, Carol. We are more than aware of, you know, it's this administration is it's quite incredible. After 7.5 years of being the worst administration, certainly in modern history, if not in American history, these guys don't give up. And now what they're trying to do is go out with a bang by passing all of these executive orders, which, as Carol indicated, will loosen up environmental regulations and do a dozen other things as well.
They just issued a new one on Medicaid. Just this morning, that would, quote, deny care or coverage to Medicaid beneficiaries who do not pay their premium or their share of the cost for a particular item of service. If you're late on your Medicaid payments, they cut you off.
Yeah, so these guys... You know, the Bush administration has been owned by big money interests, by all the special interests in Washington, and now they're paying their debt. But we will take a hard look at all of these and move as quickly as possible to rescind them when necessary, and I think in most cases it will be necessary.
John in Wyoming, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm doing okay. I just want to make a couple quick bullet points on the rail system to move freight. I'm a truck driver. And, hey, if I could get a local job to move from a train yard around to the stores in town and in the ability to organize and get fair wages, we haven't gotten a mile per cent raise in over 20 years. All we've been able to do is work longer and spend less time at home. And I think it's largely due to what I call a Walmartism that the country's facing right now, where the big companies just keep getting bigger, swallowing up the little companies, their profit margins go up, and it all goes to the fat cats at the top. They don't pay the employees anything.
It's called
regular. Well, Don, I think Don said it better than I can say it. That's what's happening is, in fact, using Walmart as an example, Tom, you know that Walmart is now by far the largest private employer in America, low wages, poor benefits, vehemently anti-union. And this is a metaphor for the transition of the American economy. It used to be General Motors was the largest private employer, good wages, producing a real product, good benefits, and now we're at Walmart. And, you know, I think what Don is telling us is we got to take a deep breath here, and we have to transform our economy into one in which people earn decent wages, have decent benefits, and not allow a handful of these large corporations and people in the financial institutions to become so incredibly big and powerful so that they can exert so much power over the world in which we're living in. It is a huge issue, and it's one that we're going to have to tackle.
Yeah, you're sounding like Teddy Roosevelt. There's Kim in Portland. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Wonderful. Senator Sanders, Tom, thank you both for all you do. Senator Sanders, I'd like to ask you to pursue dedicating bailout money to help new industries spread across America. In Portland, Oregon, I'm the founder of the donation services industry. It's a new industry that could quickly create thousands of good jobs across America. My company is Donation Services, which we spell D-O-U-G-H, like money, and a capital N in nation. We document the tax deduction value of good things people donate, then deliver everything to community nonprofits. We just helped a couple downsize. They donated a huge amount of furniture, clothing, and household goods. They paid donation $2,000. They got a deduction over $20,000, which gave them back more than three times what they paid donation. I think new industries like mine are vital for rebuilding our nation's economy, and I think new industries deserve at least as much help from our government as old industries that are failing.
Well, thank you for what you're doing, and congratulations. As I mentioned earlier in this program, and I hope people pay strong attention to this and speak to their members of the Senate and the House about their views on this, there is going to be a major, major stimulus package, the largest in our lifetime, coming up pretty soon. And we need it because we need to rebuild our economy and put people back to work at good wages. And the debate will center around exactly where that money can be spent that will be most effective in creating good jobs as soon as possible. So I urge people to participate in that debate.
Amen. David in Jacksonville, Florida, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Bernie, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I was wondering, what committees are you on in Congress right now?
I am on the Environmental Committee, I'm on the Energy Committee, I'm on the Veterans Committee, I'm on the Budget Committee, and I'm on the Health, Education, Labor Committee.
That's five committees. Yeah. Are you appointed to them? How did you get on them? Who appointed them to you?
I'm sorry?
I said, how did you get on them? Were you appointed to them? Or
yeah, what did you... Well, you make the way it works is you put in a request. You tell the majority leader what committees you would like to be on, and I was very lucky. Senator Reid was very kind to me and put me on pretty much the committees that I wanted.
That's great. The whole seniority thing there is, I think, a mystery to a lot of people, you know, how the leadership is elected and everything else. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Ours, airamerica.com, tomhartman.com. Free live video stream, our free podcast, free audio, free chat room. Hey, drop in, hang out. I'm going to go say hi to the folks in the chat room during the break here. We'll be right back with more from Senator Sanders.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
goes down the drain.
Yeah, yeah.
9.5 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program brought to you by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors, supporting our radio stations. Take a second, give them a shout, let them know that you're listening. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders answering your questions. His website, sanders.senate.gov. And in Los Angeles, California, is it pronounced Purin? Your name?
Purin.
Purin. You're Purin on the air with Singh. Senator Sanders.
Purin Singh.
You're on the air, sir.
Okay. You've probably heard all this $70 an hour myth for auto workers when it turns out that that's a total lie. It's closer to $28.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw.
It's a lie that's been widely repeated by the corporate media.
Right. And I was wanting to know from Bernie what you can do to dispel this myth in the Congress, because, as you know, you've got all these people from all these representatives from right-to-work states that keep repeating that lie again and again.
No, that's it is a myth. I think what they have done is added up all of the costs of the big three and then to divide it between the people who are working today. They forget the fact that General Motors and Ford and Chrysler are paying off pensions to large numbers of people who are not working.
Right, and those people paid into those pension funds, by the way, when they were working.
No, that's exactly right. And not to mention, and this is not something we should be very happy about, the union there, the UAW, had to sign a two-tier system a while back, so the workers who are now starting off their career are paid substantially less than the older workers. And what worries me about all of that is that working at the big three used to be the gold standard for manufacturing in America. And if you see those wages being beaten down, then what's going to happen to a non-union worker in Vermont or any other state in this country? What kind of wages are those people going to get? And this is just part and parcel of the continuous attack on working families all over this country. You raised the question earlier in the show, Tom. You raised the issue about how historically when productivity went up, wages went up, and that's no longer the case. And what we're seeing now is productivity is going up, but the middle class is going down. Real wages are in serious decline. And if we don't turn that around, not only is the middle class of this country today not going to survive, but our kids are going to do even worse. And we are just right now in an extraordinary moment with a new president, with a new Congress, and we're going to have to tackle these issues forthrightly. We should not be apologetic to anybody that a working person makes a decent living. And that's what we want. We want a vibrant middle class. And the UAW over the years has managed to create that situation, and they're losing it right now. But one of the reasons that we got to fight for unions is to see that we regain decent wages, not only for union members, but for all Americans. And that's certainly one of the tasks that's going to be facing this Congress very shortly.
Yes. Lawrence in Berkeley, California. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Bernie. I think it's really great to spend federal money to create good jobs. But the economic recovery is not going to work unless you tax the rich, that is in the long run, because the alternative to a real graduated income tax is to borrow more money from the Chinese and the Saudis. And that's going to collapse the dollar, and we'll be worse off than we are now. You know, we need some kind of graduated income tax that is some percentage of what was 91% on millionaires in the Eisenhower administration. So I was going to suggest that we create a national alliance for a graduated income tax that would be the wedge for unions and all progressive forces to
roll back the Reagan tax cuts.
That's right.
There you go.
Well, you know, it's funny to mention 91% tax rate on Dwight David Eisenhower, who is not regarded as one of the most radical presidents in our history. And you know what? During that particular period, the economy did very, very well.
Yep.
And I think, Lawrence, what we've got to deal with is not only politically and legislatively, we have to deal with it culturally as well, that this culture of greed, which is so pervasive among the ruling class of this country now. We've got to start challenging that. We've got to challenge the magazines that put on their front pages, all these guys whose major claim to fame is having made billions and billions of dollars. And we've got to start questioning whether that is really the kind of models that we want for our young people. But what we have right now is millions of people think the function of life is just to go out and make as much money as you can, make a billion, make $2 billion. That's the way it is. And you don't have to worry about anybody else in this world. You don't have to worry about the growing number of people who are poor or the decline of the middle class or the growing gap between the very rich and everybody else. You don't have to worry about that. And I think that's wrong. So I agree with you. I certainly agree that we need a progressive income tax. But I think also we have to approach it not just legislatively. We have to deal with this issue of greed. You know, all over the world, you have CEOs in other countries. Of course, they make more than their workers, but you don't have a 400-to-1 gap. And in many countries of the world, people would be embarrassed by that. So we had a lot of work to do legislatively and culturally as well.
Caleb in Portland, Oregon. We have about a minute left here, Caleb. Quick question.
Hey, you know, we're grateful for you guys. Got to tell you, Thanksgiving shows us gratitude. And also, I'm great, Senator Sanders. When you the quote with you on Greenspan about 2 weeks ago that Tom played was just incredible. Sir, in terms of raising tariffs is on foreign competitors and so on. Is anyone within the Barack Obama camp suggesting this?
Well, you know, if you listen to Obama's campaign, he talked about unfair trade practices, about tax breaks for companies who exported jobs. But frankly, that is not an area that I think President-elect Obama has focused on enough. And it's an area that some of us will try to be raising and getting through to him. I think if we don't deal with our disastrous trade policies, it's going to be hard to improve the lives of the middle class in this country.
Bernie, it is always an honor and a pleasure to have you on the program and to have, well, to have your hour here on our show.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Much
Sanders.Senate.gov. Get over to Bernie's website right away. Coming up next, Anything Goes Friday. Your calls, 866-303-2270. Tom Hartman with you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And hello there, my friends. Excuse me. Yeah, that's how I feel. I'm going to push right through it, though. Running on Sudafed. Tom Hartman here with... Actually, we couldn't find any Sudafed. I don't think they sell it anymore because you can make the stuff into meth. So instead it's... what is this? Dextromethorphan hydrobromide. Yeah. Which means that when I try to walk down the hall, it feels like the walls are moving. But anyway, welcome back. The flu-infected Tom Hartman here with you live the day after Thanksgiving. And, yes, the George W. Bush Presidential Library is now accepting donations. The library will include the Hurricane Katrina Room, which is still under construction, the Alberto Gonzalez Room, where you won't be able to remember anything, the Texas Air National Guard Room, where you don't even have to show up, the Walter Reed Hospital Room, where they don't let you in, the Guantanamo Bay Room, where they don't let you out, the Weapons of Mass Destruction Room, which no one has been able to find, the National Debt Room, which is huge and has no ceiling, the Tax Cut Room, with entry only to the wealthy, the Economy Room, which is in the toilet, the Iraq War Room, after you complete your first visit, they make you go back for a second, third, fourth, and sometimes fifth visit. The Dick Cheney Room in the famous undisclosed location, complete with shotgun gallery. The Environmental Conservation Room, it's still empty. The Supreme Court Gift Shop, where you can buy an election. The Airport Men's Room, where you can meet some of your favorite Republican senators. The Decider Room, complete with dartboard, Magic 8 Ball, Ouija board, dice, coins, and straws. And the library will feature an electron microscope to help you locate and view President George W. Bush's accomplishments. Thanks to Frankie. I'm sure that this is just, you know, viral all over the web, who forwarded that to me in email. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Anything Goes Friday, whatever you want to talk about. Let me just just before we pick up the phone calls, very, very quickly, just a quick summary. The attackers in Mumbai, I think I mentioned on the program on Wednesday as this thing was starting, I have stayed in the Taj Hotel many times. We used to be in the travel business, and I could get good discounts. A very nice hotel, right on the water. It's a really cool hotel. I mean, it was built like in, I don't know, 1903, I think. And it looks it. It's got a little bit of a seedy look to it, but it's also like kind of the old British Raj elegant, you know, and it's a landmark. It's a beautiful, beautiful hotel. One of the best Indian restaurants in the world is located there. And I've stayed there many times. Louise and Kareth and I stayed there, in fact, the last time we went to India. And this is just tragic. The thing that concerns me the most is that a war with India and Pakistan could become the Archduke Ferdinand event for the world. This could be a really serious problem. You know, when Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated in Sarajevo and it started World War I, and nobody really knew how or why. Well, it was because of all these interlocking agreements, interlocking defense agreements. And Pakistan and India both have nuclear weapons. India has refused to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Agreement. And still George Bush went over and said in exchange for mangoes, he was giving them, literally, this is what he said. He thought he was making a joke, but he actually said, well, they've got great mangoes that we will import many of. And in exchange, we are giving them nuclear technology. Now, the nuclear technology we were giving them was nuclear energy technology, which means that the existing nuclear energy technology they have, they can move offline and use it to enrich uranium and make plutonium and make bombs, which they're doing. And the current government of India is pretty nationalistic. And the current government of Pakistan is dealing with a huge nationalistic uprising. Pakistan primarily Muslim, India primarily Hindu. Both countries have a small militant group of the opposite religion within their borders, as well as others. And the biggest others, I would say, in both countries are the animists, the tribal people who are neither Muslim, Christian, Hindu, or anything else. They refer to them as the heathens. But in any case, the possibility that this could, and this is why I was very, frankly, heartened, pleased today. To see that the ISI, the Pakistani Secret Intelligence Service, which had funneled money to Mohammad Atta, remember, before 9/11, that the ISI, something that was never seriously pursued, the ISI is actually going to India to help in the investigation. Now, whether that's to cover their butt or whether that's to actually help, time will tell. But I think it's really important that right now it look like, and it actually be, ultimately, that the Pakistani government and the Indian government be engaged with each other. Commercial mortgages, everybody's concerned now about commercial mortgages melting down. There's a bunch of other stuff in the news. We'll get to it as we continue along through the show. 866-303-2270, our phone number, Rick in San Luis Obispo. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hi. I have an idea of how we might deal with the bailout for the auto companies and actually accomplish something environmentally, and that it would be, instead of just giving them like $10 billion each or whatever we're thinking of, if we actually ordered $10 billion worth of electric cars, like especially like the EV1 that General Motors developed and then took off the market.
Yeah, one way to do that would be that drives it from the bottom up, I mean, or very much closer to the bottom up, would be to say that we will give a $5,000 tax credit to any American who places an order. Even though you can't take delivery right now, it'll probably take a year and a half before you could get the car, maybe two. But who places an order for a plug-in hybrid or an electric car manufactured by one of these three companies in the United States? You could very specifically target that tax credit. And that way, the money is actually going to the consumers, and the consumers then would go out and be shopping, and the car companies would have an incentive to develop the prototypes, develop the products, and start competing immediately. That's a great idea.
You know what?
Go ahead.
I was thinking that the problem with GM seems to be that, you know, they developed a really good electric car, but for some reason had a lot of reticence about really marketing the thing.
The Volt, yeah. Yeah, it's just been slow coming to market. And it's one of the problems that these car companies have. And thanks for the call, Ray. General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, one of the major problems that all three of them have is that it takes, on average, around 5 years for a car to come from design to the market, to the showroom. Whereas the Japanese auto manufacturers, they can do it as little as 20 or 30 months, you know, 2 years more or less, or 3 years. And frankly, I think that to a large extent, this is a problem that has to do with the fact that starting in the 1980s, and again, this it all goes back to Ronald Reagan. I hate to sound like a broken record, but during the Reagan administration, as there was this whole ownership society thing, as Bush calls it, the idea that, you know, we want everybody to think of themselves as a capitalist. The capitalism is going to solve all ills. That even managers, even people who run companies, even CEOs need to think of themselves not as, hey, I'm Rick Wagoner. I'm the guy who runs General Motors. I'm waking up every day asking myself, what can I do today to help make General Motors a stronger company? See, that's how it used to be. Instead, they wanted Rick Wagoner to wake up every morning and say, hey, I'm Rick Wagoner. I own a bunch of GM stock. What can I do today to inflate the value of that stock? And there's a huge difference between those two things. And what happened in the 1980s under Reagan was they changed the rules of compensation. They made it harder to pay higher salaries to CEOs, capped them out at $1 million, which is an admirable thing, the tax deductibility to the company at $1 million. But they made it easier to compensate them with stock. And this was sold to Congress, or at least to the Democrats in Congress, as, excuse me, as capping employee compensation. In fact, it wasn't. It was the opposite. It was CEO compensation. It was expanding CEO compensation. And so you get these CEOs who are getting millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of stock or stock options so that they can convert into stock. And so every morning they started waking up saying, hey, I'm Rick Wagoner, and my question for the day is, what can I do to inflate my stock value? And when your only question, or when your first question is, how do I inflate my stock value? Yes, you are thinking like a stockholder. You're not thinking like an owner. Stockholders are not owners. Owners are concerned about the long-term viability of the company. Yes, if you own stock, you own a piece of the company, arguably, technically. But there's a very different mindset here. And we need to do away with this. We need to change the rules back to the way they were before Reagan came into office so that it is impossible, so that you can no longer compensate employees with stock. So that those employees, particularly senior management, because that's what's been happening, is the senior management has been making decisions for the better part of 26 years now based on how to inflate the value of the stock of the company rather than how to make the company viable and how to build the company and how to roll out new products. They don't do this in Japan, by the way. They don't do it in South Korea. They don't do it in Germany. They don't do it in Switzerland. They don't do it in Sweden. And we wonder why the Swedish cars and the German cars and the Japanese cars and the South Korean cars are eating our lunch. It's because their leadership is concerned about the future.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to Anything Goes Friday, 21 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, a place where we talk about the issues that the multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about, which may or may not include a 13-year-old kid in Florida, Martin County, arrested for passing gas. Yep. I didn't know this was against the law. Oh, man. And here's another one. In Ohio, this guy was, they were going to bust this guy on dogfighting charges, right? Like Michael Vick, you know, he's had these dogs that were doing dogfighting. So they showed up, and they brought along a police dog. And the police dog took one look at the guy that they were arresting and bit him. Somehow he knew, right? It's karma. Oh, my. Sean in Vancouver. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. Hey, I hope you feel better soon. Thanks for coming in.
I hope so, too. I'm flying to New York tomorrow. I'm going to be doing the show all week from there next week, so I hope I'm not taking anything with me today. I will get better. I will.
Excellent. Tom, I'm calling this morning because, you know, you've been alive longer than me. You remember what it was like to live through the Vietnam War. And
yes, I'm an old man, Sean. You're absolutely right. It's true.
Hey, sorry about that.
No, it's fine. That's fine.
But as I was reflecting yesterday about all the things that, you know, I should be grateful for, and I know gratitude is very important to, you know, just help get through the day, I couldn't help but avoid feelings of exasperation and powerlessness. And I was calling this morning, Tom, to see if you could help people in general, young people who are listening, kind of put in perspective what it's like to have $7 trillion of the public treasury put up for the Wall Street banks. I mean, I was thinking yesterday also about Native Americans and what it's like to be under occupation, and what the Iraqis must feel like to be under occupation. Well, I feel like I'm not an American anymore. I feel like our country is under occupation by these Wall Street investment bankers. I was wondering if you could help put that in perspective a little bit. Am I over dramatizing this?
No, I think it's a great metaphor, and I would say that there was a coup d'etat in this country in 2000, the election of 2000. You had three of the five members of the Supreme Court who voted to make George Bush president had family members who were working on the George Bush campaign, which is wrong. It's a crime. They made a decision which they explicitly said in the decision should not be considered precedent because it was so off the wall. They knew it was off the wall. They were going against a decision of the Florida Supreme Court, which said, let's count every single vote in the state. And had they done that, by the way, as the New York Times and the Washington Post pointed out, and, you know, the news consortium, Al Gore would have won the election. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there was a coup d'etat in this country. And we have been occupied for the last 8 years, and I think we all know it.
Well, and, you know, as hopeful as I am for Obama, Tom, what are your thoughts on, you know, Tim Geithner being an understudy of Robert Rubin, having been one of the people who came up with CDOs, these derivative products?
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that Geithner is going to be a bad guy. The good news here, and I really see this as good news, Sean. I mean, we should revisit this conversation in 60 or 70 days. You know, but,
of course.
But the good news is that Barack Obama built a nationwide network of activists in order to get himself elected. And that network, hopefully, is not going to go away. Mm-hmm. And we need to maintain, you know, those of us who participated in that network and join that network, we need to maintain that network to push him. You know, it's the old story about how I forget who it was, you know, came to FDR and said he wanted to integrate the military and you know, that it was the right thing to do and now's the time to do it and et cetera, et cetera. And FDR said, make me do it, please. In mm-hmm. other words, create the political will. We have to create the political pressure so that our politicians can do the right thing. And that's what we need to be doing. But Sean, I thank you for your call. I think that your metaphor of an occupied country is a very appropriate one. And there's a lot of truth to it, you know, for better or for worse. Now, Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, how you doing today?
It's turkey and noodles day.
It is. It's turkey sandwich day, I guess. We and tofurkey, in the case of my family, we were actually able to find a gluten-free, it's made from mycelium. It's made from fungus turkey. So.
Wow.
Well, yeah. I knew that would blow your mind, Armin.
Wait a minute, don't set off echelon. Hey, anyway, Tom, no, we just had a 4-hour slow-roasted big bird that, oh, my God, it's incredibly delicious. But anyway,
I remember it from my childhood, Armin, and I'm sure you enjoyed it. I you know, and I'm glad you did.
Okay, please, Tom, let me go as long as you control the button. I'm cool with that.
We have 45 seconds till the break at the bottom of the hour, Armin. It's all yours.
Okay,
what's up?
Okay. Basically, what we have, Bernie, and everybody needs to acknowledge, is we have socialized corporate trickleonomics of by and for the rich, and it's not by consent of the governed democratically. So that's what we effectively have as an economic system. We don't want it, but that's what we got.
Yeah, it's a kleptocracy.
Right, and next, 90% of us out here are never going to have the retirement pension, or you still there, or the health care pension of the GM workers, so why do 90% of us owe them something that we're never going to get? And I think the Republicans...
Because they paid into it, Armin. I mean, you know, I think you and I are on the same page on this, but just in the event that you are misconstrued, these people paid into these pensions. They took a reduction in pay in order to have a pension. I know. My dad was one of them. And they took a reduction in pay in order to have a pension. And so to have these cons sit around now saying, oh, my God, we're paying pensions for people who aren't even working? Nah, it's so wrong.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
We're going to watch you, Ben.
Every change of race, jobs you don't create, while we still stack fleet, I'll be watching you. Every single day, Bernanke takes my pay. When growth goes away, inflation will stay, and I'll be watching you. Can't you see the Fed's where I should be? I'm a poor heartache with each of your mistakes. Just you move your lips like a few more bips when demand then dips and the yield curve flips. I'll be watching you.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, and that song came out before the whole crash. It's amazing. Welcome back, my friends. We're sitting here in the studio, Louise and Sean and I. Sean is recovering from her broken ankle and three surgeries and three. And Louise and I are sitting here sniffling and trying out new and exotic things from the medicine cabinet. I'm afraid to take the stuff. I'm on the air. You know, but Louise has got something in there that's dried out her sinuses. And the monitor in the studio, we have a TV monitor in the studio that has the sound off, and it's tuned to CNN, and it's showing a picture of the Taj Hotel in India. And guess what? Guess what we're seeing on the monitor? Pigeons! They're all over the Taj Hotel. I tell you, they're spies from the planet Xenu. They are checking out what's going on. Anytime, anywhere in the world, there is a major event. What do you have? You have pigeons. They are robotic spies. 866-303-2270, your phone number. Michael in Missoula, Montana, right?
Hey, thanks, Tom, for having me on today. I think you're doing a great job. And I think what you might have is this bird flu.
God forbid, Michael.
I think that's, you know, with all these...
I think it's just the old generic flu, and it peaked out yesterday, much to the chagrin of our three kids who came over for Thanksgiving and their significant others. But
keep it in your studio.
Yeah, I'm doing my best to you know, washing my hands a lot and not breathing on anybody, and
anyway,
I'll be all better tomorrow.
I really appreciate your show and what you guys have been doing, and I was just listening to Bernie Sanders a little bit ago about they talk about Amtrak, and we live out here in Montana, rural Montana. And at one time, we had four passenger trains run through Missoula, Montana. And now we have none.
Right.
And I think people are getting tired of flying. They're getting tired of the hassles of driving. And you got a lot of seniors and students that need to get around.
Yep.
And if they want to create jobs, I think if you know this story about General Motors, Firestone, and Standard Oil back in the 30s, there was a conspiracy to get rid of the streetcars in this country.
Oh, yeah, in cities all across America. They were nailed for it in court in Los Angeles, you know, in that
exactly.
case.
Exactly. They fined them $1 in federal court.
Right, right.
And I think GM wants to create some jobs they can retool overnight and start building railroad cars.
Well, there are companies that do that. In fact, you know, and I was thinking... I'd have to go back and look, but my recollection is that there was a company that was making railroad cars in the United States. In fact, it's in Vermont. They used to ship the cars right by our house when we lived in Montpelier. And
right.
I think they're still in business.
Right.
But there's, you know, Yeah, I think that there's lots of opportunities there. I think that there's also opportunities for cars. I mean, this is the thing, Michael. When we did our show from Denmark, it just this thing just totally blew my mind. They are producing. They've got these giant windmills out there in the harbor in Copenhagen, and they're producing 18 or 19% of all the electricity, all the energy for the country. The electricity is produced by these windmills. And during the nighttime, the windmills are still spinning. In fact, sometimes they spin even a little faster, but very little of that electricity is used. So they're trying to come up with a way to figure out how to use this electricity. So the government has produced a grant to a Danish auto manufacturer and to make plug-in electric cars. And what they're going to do is they're going to say, if you are an average citizen and you buy one of these cars and you plug it in at home, and you buy electricity at night off the power grid for 2 cents a kilowatt hour to charge your car. Then you drive to work, and you use about 10% of the charge to get to work, and you got 90% of the charge left in the car. You plug the car in at work, and you sell electricity back to the city, back into the power grid during the daytime at 5 or 6 or 7 cents a kilowatt hour. And you make a profit. And by the end of the day, your car is down to about 80%, you know, 80% of the charge is gone. It's down to about 20%. You drive home, you use up 10%. You're getting down to the ragged edge. You drive home, you plug it in, and you charge it up overnight again and buy it back at 2 cents a kilowatt hour. And so everybody in the country's car becomes a giant storage battery that charges at night and discharges during the day. The individuals are participating in the system. And they will be able, without putting up a single extra windmill, to go from 18% electricity being produced by wind power to close to 30% or over 30% electricity being produced by wind power. I mean, there's so much innovative stuff. The only reason that oil is a strategic resource is because we use it for transportation. If we no longer used oil for transportation, we only produce 2% of our electricity in this country from oil.
Tom, years ago, the Milwaukee Railroad from Tacoma, Washington to Chicago was electrified in 1909. And that, when they had that system up and running, that electricity would go back into the grid and reproduce electricity.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just like in Europe. All the trains are electric and it's all part of one massive grid system. And right. you just move it around. It's a very fungible product. Michael, thank you very much. Well said. Amen. Absolutely. Frank in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom, thank you very much for what you do.
Thank you.
And take care, because we need countrymen like you.
Thank you.
The thing that I'm worried about right now with the Obama administration is how soon he can get our fairness doctrine back and reduce the monopoly with some sort of quick legislation on the news media,
Well, here's my problem with the fairness doctrine, Frank. And because I think that this is a red herring that's being put out by the right wing. I don't know any progressives who are in favor of the fairness doctrine. I worked in radio when the fairness doctrine was in place. And it really did not require that if you run Michael Savage on a radio station, you have to follow him with Tom Hartman. It didn't. And that's how the right wingers are spinning it. What it said was that, if there was a political issue in town, you had to cover all dimensions, all sides of the issue. You had to basically be fair and balanced. I mean, in your news coverage, and it really was about news coverage. And frankly, I'm a little concerned. I mean, somebody could come along. You know, who's going to decide what's what? For example, my position on tariffs, for example, on trade. You know, I believe that we should have tariffs. I think we should go back to tariffs. They served us well for over 200 years in the United States. You know, I was on this Air America cruise last week with Gary Hart. He's opposed to tariffs. He thinks that that's reactionary. And I'm not putting him down for that at all. I respect that point of view. There are a lot of people who think that, hey, it's a global world. You know, suck it up. And a lot of progressives who think that. So does that mean that I should be balanced out by somebody else, by somebody on the left or somebody on the, and who's going to make that decision? Are we going to hire a bureaucrat? Who's going to make? So I just, the way that the right wing is putting forward the whole idea of a fairness doctrine is a straw man. It never existed. It will not exist. It wouldn't work. What we need, however, is the concept, are two things. Number one, we need to enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act and break up the media monopolies. And this is not limited to radio, by the way. This is right across, particularly in print media. And number two, we need to have programming in the public interest. The you talk about socialism in the United States. The biggest socialistic system is the airwaves, radio, television, and cable, because they all go through public rights of way. Cable systems go along public rights of way, along streets and roads. The radio spectrum is owned by we the people. This is the commons. This is something we all collectively own. This is the essence of socialism, as it were, and we're giving the right to use that to companies, and in exchange for that right to use it, we should be demanding that they program in the public interest. In other words, that they actually offer real news, for example.
Tom, President-elect Obama is going to get hammered mercilessly, by these right-wing stations all over. And do you think they might be able to do something within his term?
With regard to what?
Do exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I think programming the public. Byron Dorgan is on this. There's a bunch of senators who are on this and doing a good job with it, Frank. And I'm very hopeful to see something positive come out of this. Just not the straw man that the conservatives are putting out there. And by the way, I think that Obama is, yes, he's going to be hammered by right-wing talk radio. He is right now. But, life of the big city. He's a big boy. He'll deal with it well. Steve in Watsonville, California. Steve, we got a break coming up here shortly. What's up?
Thanks, Tom. On this Black Friday, let us all say a prayer for Al Franken.
Amen.
My mom used to use a vaporizer for sinus problems. It sounds like you got a real built-up sinus.
I remember those. My mom used to, too. And you put Vicks in there with the water.
Good old water cure, which is something Gandhi would have liked. And the reason I called was about the partition of India and Pakistan. I'm questioning whether that partition, which was solely arranged by the British, like they did in Northern Ireland, isn't that the source of the whole problem? Did you get a chance to see the Taj Mahal?
No, I've never been to the Taj Mahal.
That's
city.
Up at the top of the Deccan Plateau. And the Mongol Empire controlled all of the subcontinent before the British Raj took over.
Yeah. It's a complex one, Steve. I'm sorry we're out of time, but it is a complex issue. And the British also, carved up Iraq, created Iraq.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, 52 days, 10 hours. No, I think it's probably more like 3 hours, 4 minutes and 31 seconds until we're totally out of this place. George W. Bush is out of office. And some great new senators are installed in office, like Mark Begich, the former mayor of Anchorage, who has won the election against Ted Stevens, the senator-elect from Alaska. BEGICH.com is his website. And Mark, we just wanted to get you on and say congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Tom, and thank you for what you have done this campaign season and making sure that the country knows that this was an opportunity, a historic opportunity, not only from the president on down, but to get the Senate to have more folks in there to actually get some things done. So, I would tune into you as I was running from event to event, and it was always good to hear you fighting the fight, and it's a great opportunity. We just don't need to blow it. That's the goal now.
There you go. So, Mark, how do we avoid that? How do we avoid, not to pick on Bill Clinton, but, he ran as a progressive and then governed as a kind of center-right guy, And how do we avoid not doing the things that really need to be done? How do we avoid being pushed around by the right wing?
I think the most important thing is we as as Democrats, and I'd say the leadership of the Democrats, we need to figure out what are those one or two or three issues that we really can focus on and do it. Instead of what we usually do as good Democrats, we like to do everything for everybody. And the problem with that is we get so scattered, we never do anything very well in the sense of what we should be doing. So you know, I think the most important thing right now, you know, this economic crisis we're in and how we focus our energies on ensuring that, that the working folks out there are getting a benefit here and trying to get them back on track. I mean, I was at a store this weekend or this week at Home Depot. This woman came up to me and talked to me about her foreclosure she's going through. She went from a very well-paying job now working at around $10 an hour, which, you know, for her and a family of three is impossible to be able to. She was literally getting boxes to move out of her home. And we have to figure out how we are going to help those folks at that level, because that's the folks that Democrats know about, understand, and that's who we represent. And we cannot forget that. And sometimes we get a little cloudy, to be very frank with you. It's one reason why I ran. I ran because the working class of this country got left behind in all this effort of this last great, you know, 8-9 years of economic boom that people thought was there, and it really wasn't. It was just a big old bubble that popped, and who paid the price? The people on the bottom end. And so I think we just got to pick those one or two items. I think healthcare is an important one, the energy issue, and the economic development or economic future of this country, and pick what's in there that we can really accomplish, because we got to prove up. If we don't prove up, you know, we've been given a great chance with a president, a strong Congress, a strong Senate, but it's up to us to prove it, that we know what we're doing.
We're talking with Mark Begich, Alaska's newest senator-elect, the former mayor of Anchorage. Are you still the mayor of Anchorage?
I am mayor until January 2nd. I am finishing up my budget. I have four labor contracts in front of the city council that I hope to get approved, and then I will move on to the Senate race, getting sworn in January 6th with a whole bunch of new colleagues, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah. You know, the economics 101, the core assumption of economics, classic economics, you know, setting aside the insanity of the last 26 years, Reaganomics, trickle-down economics, but classical economics that everybody has understood for, you know, since the ancient Sumeria, is that an economy is driven by supply and demand, and that the supply is, that the demand is created by wages, people who spend most of their income buying things, right, and that the demand, and the supply is created by productivity. In other words, being able to produce things that will meet that demand. And historically, if you look at the history of the United States for over 200 years, as supply increased, demand increased, supply increased, they were always pretty much intertwined. There was very rarely more than about a 1% spread between the two. With the exception of some periods that we referred to as depressions and things. But by and large, they were always
pretty
parallel.
Cool. Yeah.
And starting in 1980, or starting in 82, really, what we saw was that wages started flattening out as these two parallel lines were rising over a 200-year period. The line for wages started flattening out, while the line for productivity, creating supply, you know, manufacturing and supply, continued to increase. And some of that productivity was the consequence of manufacturing going offshore. Some of it was technology. Some of it, you know, was just that people were more productive. But the wages flattened out. And for the last 26 years, we've seen wages virtually completely flat while productivity has increased. And the only way that demand has matched productivity over these last 26 years is people haven't been able to buy things with their wages, so they've been using their homes as ATMs, they've been using credit cards, that we've been filling that gap, that wedge that opened up, that slice that opened up, we've been filling that with debt. And and it seems that the only way that we can solve this problem is to get wages back to where they, you know, the, back so that there's some concordance between those two. How, in your mind, is the best way to do that, to get wages up in the United States?
Well, no, you're right on that issue of the wages. One of the things that I think has to be done, this new, we are using it here in Anchorage and throughout Alaska, and this, we're, you know, obviously moving down to a new economy, the green economy. I think there's some incredible opportunities with new energy and new, some people call it green collar, whatever you want to call them. It's the new energy economy that is going to bring, I think, some great wage opportunities. I mean, I think of the projects we're doing here in Anchorage, for example. We're doing a light conversion project. It's a labor project, but it is good wages because it takes electricians, technical people, and they're getting some decent wages, which means we're adding more folks on the line that need those types of jobs, which in turn, of course, means the wages are going to go up.
And that creates demand, and that makes the marketplace boom.
And that's a great, you know, when you think about this economy, if you look at all, and I'll just use one segment of the energy market and take the power plants that are in this country that are old, inefficient, using old technology. If you just said, we're going to invest in new technologies, more efficient plants, the amount of people you need for that is huge. And the types of skill levels, all the way from the laborer to the highly technical people. So that's what you got to do, create the new economy that's out there.
That's absolutely great. Mark Bagich, going off to the United States Senate, the latest and one of the finest members of the new Senate, Mark, Senator-elect, sir. Thank you very much for being with us, and congratulations.
Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Me too. Thank you very much. Senator-elect Mark Bagich with us. Tom Hartman here with you. Peter Yarrow, Peter, Paul, and Mary, up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. We are so pleased to have in the studio, once again, last time was so many months ago, Peter Yarrow, formerly of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
No, not formerly. In fact,
still with.
Be at Carnegie Hall on December 5th, which is, and Mary will, you know, we had to cancel 3 concerts last month. But
Stephanie, are you picking up our audio?
Bethany.
No,
Stephanie.
Oh, you are. Okay, because I was hearing the background music continuing to play. I didn't know why.
Okay.
You were saying.
So we're going to be performing there in that Christmas Hanukkah holiday celebration. The group is still together. The reason we haven't been out performing is that Mary had leukemia, and she had a bone marrow transplant, and then she had a back operation. And she does have a residual inflammation that they can't really knock out in the lungs, so she has to be on a certain amount of oxygen. But we did 2 concerts with her oxygen, and people just, as soon as she made a joke about it, it was gone. She, you know, they have those plastic tubes
everything, yeah.
But she said it was a new kind of jewelry, and that was the end of that.
And your daughter, Bethany Yarrow, is here with us. Hi, Bethany.
Bethany is indeed.
Lovely to see you.
Thank you for joining. And you sing with your dad.
I do.
Sometimes.
And you have 2 new songs out, and these are beautiful albums. Favorite
books.
The Peter Yarrow songbooks, favorite folk songs. And for those of you who are watching on Tom Vision, you can see all 3 of us live right now on TV on your web. Go to airamerica.com or tomhartman.com, and you can just click on the Tom Vision picture, and it'll pop up. Here's the Peter Yarrow songbook, favorite folk songs, the CD, plus the whole story, the beautiful illustrated book.
Yes, it follows up the Puff the Magic Dragon book.
And then the Sleepy Time songs.
Each one of them is 12 songs. And this, when we finish with the 4 books, and there may be more, there'll be a huge resource for bringing music into the homes, but also for school teachers and school counselors and administrators. Anybody who's going to use it educationally, the music itself, thanks to Sterling Publishers, Good Graces, will be available for free.
Great.
And you go to the Operation Respect website.
Yeah, operationrespect.org is the website. And you will be playing tonight. You're here in Portland to play tonight at the Monkey and Rat. Monkey
Actually,
and Rat.
This afternoon at 4.
This afternoon at 4.
And
thank
it's
you.
No admission. It's at Bethany's brother's.
Who happens to be my father's son.
Yeah.
That's right. We happen to have that peculiar kind of relationship. And Bethany and I will be singing. And she has sung many times there before, and I have. And they get the best kind of mixture of people who are really grassrootsy. And
yeah, we've got some great music places here in Portland. So you'll be at the Monkey and the Rat at 4 o'clock this afternoon for our listeners on KPOJ. And
it's free, but it's not a performing space per se. It's a place where he sells objects from faraway places, mainly Thailand.
Yeah.
And it's quite beautiful because his taste is impeccable.
So, Peter, we were talking off the air before you came on about how you had been in, I believe it was in New York, you were helping with the Obama campaign.
Well, Bethany and I both went, but then she went to Philadelphia. But I was going from phone bank to phone bank. You know, they in the last 4 days, they had a target of doing 10 million calls to people, some people receiving a lot, calls a lot, just to make sure that, you know, that they were able to get out there and vote. And I would get on the phone when I was there. First of all, we would say something like the following. We only had about 5 minutes because they had to keep calling. But I would say, I sang on the March on Washington in 1963 with Paul and Mary, and we are standing on the shoulders of the 250,000 people there that launched that movement and Dr. Martin Luther King, and we sang this song as well as Blowing in the as well as If I Had a Hammer very shortly prior to his singing it. And I want you to realize what this means to so many people in our country. And then we would sing the answer, my friend. They would hear that, the whole spirit of the place would focus. And then I would say, look, that movement was not delivered by virtue of pressure and animosity and forcing people to do things. It was done by virtue of inspiration and love. And your job today is to remember that this would not have been possible, and therefore you're carrying on that tradition. So when you get on the phone, you are respecting that person. You're grateful for the time. And then I got on the phone in one place, and I sang, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea
and frolicked in the autumn mist in a lamp of
and little Jackie Paper, he loved that rascal. About voting for Obama, don't you see? Because that would be an extraordinary thing for the world, for peace and for harmony. And then I'd get off the phone, and the person on the other end, who is this? And I said, it's Peter Yarrow from Peter Paul and Mary. She said, get out of here. And I said, no, it's true. I'm making calls and I'm here with my daughter. And she said, well, what, you know, I'm thinking of voting for him, but, you know, he doesn't have any experience. And I would say, well, you know, I understand that he hasn't the experience that, for instance, George Bush has, and we could have the reiteration of that point of view. But what he had was the heart and the good sense to say, I will not vote for giving the president the right to wage war in Iraq. And he has the heart and he has the moral intelligence that we need to move forward. And we went through a series of questions at the end. I said, thank you so much for the time that you gave me. I know you're treating this very seriously. And she said, you know, I think your arguments have been very... very convincing. I'm going to be voting for Barack Obama. And everybody in the room that had heard both sides of this conversation cheered.
That's great.
So that's
phone banking for Obama, Peter Yarrow.
So
Peter
there they Paul were, Mary. You know, singing Puff the Magic Dragon. And, you know, no, and magic lives forever.
And what a wonderful and healthy antidote to that disgusting corruption of it that Rush Limbaugh was promoting, you know, which I'm not even going
to... It's hard, you know, to now we have to maintain the kind of balanced dignity that Obama, you know, in Alice Walker's a letter that you sent to me, Bethany, where she says, you have to take care of yourself and be with your family, because it's so important that not only do you make good decisions in terms of administration and direction, but that you be who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and that's who he was. And, you know, I've been oppositional and the loyal opposition, you know, since 1963. Mm-hmm. And now, for the first time, the majority of America is on the same page.
Yeah.
With my point of view, I don't know what to do with all this happening.
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing, and we have just a minute before the break here. I think it's just a, and we're, and Peter Yarrow and Bethany Yarrow are here with us. OperationRespect.org, the website. You can find the Sleepy Time songs and the favorite folk songs, their new books, music, their CDs, or music, or whatever.
The music.
Yeah.
Peter's musica.
Musica. There you go. And Peter will be taking your calls. Maybe you can answer some questions in song as you did last time you were here.
Absolutely.
That's great. So we'll ask Mike to clear the lines and just take calls for Peter Yarrow or Peter and Bethany Yarrow. Peter formerly of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
And Bethany of Bethany and Rufus. And it was because of Bethany and Rufus that I wanted to re-record these songs. Because when Bethany was singing with me and Rufus created their new perspective, all of a sudden, the songs were fresh.
There you go. There you go. Peter Yarrow with us, OperationRespect.org, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Singer, songwriter, storyteller, activist, a member of Peter, Paul, and Mary, and now Peter, Bethany, and Rufus. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Go to Teamster.org for more information. And we're very pleased to have live in the studio with us here in Portland, Oregon, Peter Yarrow and Bethany Yarrow. And now Peter, Bethany, and Rufus, also Peter, Paul, and Mary. And Peter and Bethany will be performing for our listeners in Portland tonight at the Monkey and Rat. MonkeyandRat.com for that information. It's 4 o'clock this afternoon, actually, not tonight. And OperationRespect.org is the website where you can see Peter's new books, the Peter Yarrow songbooks, Sleepy Time songs, and favorite folk songs. And you can see us all here live in the studio.
And that's where you download the music if you're an educator.
Yeah,
and
get it for free.
I have to tell you that we went, Bethany and I went to sing for the phone banks at the Teamsters Union headquarters in New York. That was one place that we went.
Oh, that's great.
That's right.
That's absolutely
great. And also at the Carpenters Union, and also then later when she went to Philadelphia, I went up to Harlem with Ben Vereen. I want to tell you, it was astonishing. I'm just still celebrating this. Talk about Thanksgiving. I mean, this is the most significant political moment in my life since the March on Washington in 1963, where I sang Blowing in the Wind and If I Had a Hammer with Paul and Mary prior to Martin Luther King's speech. And it's amazing, and I can't get away from that. Yeah. In any event, there's somebody on the phone.
Well, right? Let's take some calls and play some music here. Pete in Los Angeles, you're on the air with Peter Yarrow and Bethany Yarrow.
Yeah, hi, my name is Pete also. I have a suggestion for Peter is that I'm watching on the webcam and he's being totally, his face is totally covered up by this microphone or whatever it is.
Okay. We'll try to figure out some way around that.
All right. Is this better?
Huh?
Is this better?
Your audio is hard to hear.
We have to bring it up. Okay.
All righty. We're working on it here. Yeah,
okay,
also, you're probably on the webcam getting a little bit of a delay, so.
Okay.
That's your trim.
Well, yeah. Also, yeah. I'd just like to convey that I think it's great that he's still carrying on after all these years. I'm not quite as old as he is, but I'm pretty old myself. And, you know, it's great to still have idealists around that, you know, encourage people to stay on the most ethical paths in life, and he's done great work all his life, and I thank him.
What's your favorite song, Pete?
You know, I don't have one. I I have several of his albums. You know, I've always been a fan. But nothing stands out as my favorite.
Well, I want to sing a song for you to thank you.
Thank you, Pete. Thanks for
and
the call.
And here is a song that I think is more appropriate now than it ever has been. And just sing with Bethany. It kind of asks, why were we doing this? Did it make sense all these years? And I was just talking to a friend about that. He says, this is for you, Pete. Not Pete Seeger, but another great Pete, I can tell. You remember when you felt each person matter? Now you see believers turn to cynics.
Wonder, was the struggle worth the cost?
And then you see someone too young to know the difference. Inside, you know, you've got to leave them something.
For the hope for something better slowly dies.
Carry on, my sweet survivor. Carry on, my lonely friend. Don't give up on the dream. Sweet survivor,
you carried it so long, so it may come again. Carry on.
I know it shall come again. Carry on, carry on.
Because it must come again. Carry on.
Last election, it has come again, and we carry on, we carry on, carry on.
That is amazing.
Thank you.
This is brilliant. Peter Yarrow and Bethany Yarrow are in the studio with us live here in Portland. We'll be picking up more calls for them and some more tunes. Right after the break at the bottom of the hour, it's the day after Thanksgiving. We are live here on Air America Radio, broadcasting from coast to coast, from sea to shining sea, and streaming all over the planet. OperationRespect.org, by the way, Peter's website. Ours, TomHartmann.com, if you want to see our live webcam. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Business like the oil business. Yeah, buying up Congress is great. Don't you just love these pastiches, Peter? Peter and Bethany Yarrow are in the studio live with us. He's performing tonight in Portland, Oregon at the Monkey and Rat. The Monkey and the Rat. And he has two new book albums out, Sleepy Time Songs and Favorite Folk Songs, and which I will hold up for the camera here. You can see them. And
recorded with Bethany and Dad. And frankly, the intergenerational aspect of this makes it extremely vital because I kind of let Bethany and Rufus's point of view take the lead on doing these so that the songs don't sound like same old, same old. As much as I love Peter, Paul, and Mary, this is today. It has elements of world music and contemporary jazz and even hip-hop.
And OperationRespect.org is the website for that. Let's take a phone call here. George in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air with Peter Yarrow, Bethany Yarrow, and me.
Well, first I must thank you for all you're doing to educate another generation. Tom, this is probably one of the best gifts you could have given your listeners today.
Thank you
so much. And to your wonderful guests, I too feel like we had so much taken from us so many years ago that I've got that sense of hope again that has been long gone in our culture. And I think the direction you're going with your music and with your websites is helping to bring about the changes that we're going to hopefully get through this rough time together.
Absolutely. I think that's well said. We are filled with hope and thanks today, and I want to sing a song to you.
Thank you, George.
That says, if I could, I surely would stand on the rock where Moses stood. Pharaoh's army got drowned in. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. Oh, Mary, don't you weep, don't you moan. Oh, Mary, don't you weep, don't you moan. Pharaoh's army got drowned in. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. Isn't it interesting how a song about the liberation of the Jews from Egypt, when Pharaoh's army got drowned, becomes a Negro spiritual and applies to today, that if we're going to celebrate this possibility of release from me, the destruction of so much of what America became, you get a 14-year-old kid who's now 22, they've never known another America than the President Bush. And fortunately, Bethany, who is, you know, my daughter, saw another series of eras and knows that there is another America. But for so many young people, this is a first. It's quite amazing.
Yep, absolutely. Ezekiel in Upland, California, you're on the air with Peter and Bethany Yarrow.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Thank you so much for everything you do. And Peter Yarrow, oh, my gosh, you guys are such heroes. I once heard you guys described as Mary Travers being a blonde angel and Paul Stuckey and Peter Yarrow as bearded prophets. I just want to thank you guys so much for being positive.
Oh,
Irene, and you guys have certainly inspired me to pick up the guitar. And just those times, the war, the assassinations, you guys were just such a just a wonderful thing to happen as a backdrop to my developmental youth in my life. I just wanted to thank you so much.
Well, you're very generous, and actually there have been other ways. We've been labeled, I think the Beatles called us Pizza Poo and Magpie, and other people called us Two Rabbis and a Hooker. It's not one of those words that you can't. And
all right, well, thanks a lot, you guys.
Do you have a request, Ezekiel?
You know, The song you guys did, I Dig Rock and Roll Music, with the great impersonations of the Beatles and the Mamas and the Papas, I thought was the best you guys had ever done. I don't expect you to reproduce it right now, but anything you want to play would be wonderful.
I'm going to do something that's vaguely approximate to that, because that's really Paul Stuckey's. It goes like this. Oh, it says, you law-abiding citizens, come listen to this song. 'Cause laws were made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children were combined. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books till folks with guts defy it. Have you been to jail for justice? I wanna shake your hand. 'Cause sitting in a light out ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched a picket line? last line in that was, but if I really play it, say it, the radio won't play it unless I lay it between the line. Mm. And that was in a time when, yes, there were, we were coming out of a period in the 1950s where films had to be submitted to government censors and during the blacklist period. So there was always that awareness that you had to kind of mask the truth, like Arthur Miller did in The Crucible. But also there was this new kind of openness that emerged in the 60s, and hence that song.
Yeah. Amen. Linda in Arcadia, California. Hey, Linda. You're on with Peter Yarrow and Bethany Yarrow.
Hi, Tom. This is Linda from Arcata, California, actually.
Arcata.
I'm up a little closer to Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And I wanted to call and thank you, Tom, for your show. I have an 18-year-old of my many children, one of my sons, who I am trying to get to listen to your show as often as possible with all the information and opposing views that you put on. And I also wanted to call and thank Peter Yarrow for I'm the daughter of a folk singer from back in the day in the 60s, and my father actually would sing me to sleep with Puff the Magic Dragon. And in fact, I named my daughter Hannah Lee honor of that.
Now we're talking serious, serious accolades.
That's wonderful.
Bethany, who has sung Puff the Magic Dragon far too many times
in my life,
has now beset with the dilemma that her daughter, my granddaughter, Valentina, has fallen in love with the song. In honor of your father's exposing you to this, and Valentina, we shall do it. Here we go.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
The magic dragon lived by the sea and cried in the autumn mist in a land called Hanali.
And little Jackie Paper, he loved that rascal Puff.
And he came on Tom Hartman's show today, and that was quite enough.
Oh, thank you so much. Tom in Manhattan, New York City, New York, is on with Peter Yarrow and Bethany Yarrow.
Hello, Peter.
Yes, my brother.
Hi. I saw you guys many times in concert, several times at Michigan State University, where Paul, or as we knew him there, Noel, was an honored graduate.
Yes, well said. That's true.
And I am thinking these days about a wonderful song you did back in the 60s called I'm in Love with a Big Blue Frog.
Oh, let's do that for you.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
I'm in love with a big blue frog.
A big blue frog loves me. It's not as bad as it appears. He's got glasses and he's 6'3". I'm not worried about our kids. I know they'll turn out neat. They'll be good looking cause they'll have my face. Great swimmers cause they'll have his feet.
Well, I'm in love with a big blue frog. A big blue frog loves me.
It's not as bad as it appears. He's got a rhythm and a PhD.
Now, you know, that was the perfect example of a song with a hidden meaning. It's about
I was wondering
blacks and whites.
Sure. Yeah, if that was subtext for racial issues.
And discrimination, yes.
And you know, I'm old enough to remember, too, that, you know, that kind of thing, you know, the Smothers Brothers shows. I mean, there was so much comedy in the 60s that had a very political subtext to it that everybody seemed to get. J. Edgar Hoover even got it. He was sending out the FBI on people.
That's right.
It was like, you know, everybody got it, and everybody was pretending that they didn't get it.
That's right.
Now we can just say it, I think.
Well, but now we can just say it.
At least on Air America.
Yeah,
but you know, that's true. Air America has been that kind of force. But until this last election, I realize now that I can be far more open now. The things that were considered... Do you know that Gephardt was called seditious by, I don't know, Cheney or Ashcroft or something for having an opinion?
Obama was supposed to carry.
Yeah, yeah, it's just amazing. We've got to take a break. We'll come back with, we'll wrap up the show.
With social.
Indeed. We're going to wrap up the show with Bethany and Peter Yarrow, and stick around. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program. Hey, thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to my producer Sean Taylor, to Stephanie Whiteman, to Shelley Osti, to Michael McDonald, to Marcus Hillman at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our radio stations all over the country, to our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. And to Peter Yarrow and Bethany Yarrow for showing up in our studio here live today.
Black Friday.
Yeah, on Black Friday, on the day after Thanksgiving here to take some calls and do a little song and dance. And for our listeners here in Portland, they will be tonight, this afternoon, starting at 4, but playing until the wee hours, you said, Peter. At the Monkey and the Rat.
It's a celebration. It's
celebration of Obama's election.
It's Obama Thanksgiving.
And OperationRespect.org is the website for their music. Eddie in Texas is on the line. Hey, Eddie, you're on with Peter Yarrow and Bethany Yarrow.
Hello, all of you.
Hello.
Hi, Eddie.
Do you remember, I know you do, I don't, the Christmas song that y'all did that was kind of Gaelic?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you, Eddie, for the request.
Sorry, wrong key. Shoo, 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 la, roo. Shoo, la, rack, shack, shoo, la, baba, coo. When I saw my Sally Babby Bill come people in the boo, shalom. When I saw my Sally Babby Bill come dibble in the Shiloh. Here I sit on Buttermilk Hill. Who could blame me, cry my fill? Every tear would turn a Johnny has gone for a soldier. Shoo, 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 la, roo. Shoo, la, rack, shack, shoo, la, baba, coo. When I saw my Sally Baby Bill come dibble in the bush, I love.
Here's the anti-war.
Some time, but when you can hope, when you can believe, when you can see that's where we're going, everything changes. And instead of being railing against what is seems to be impossible, gone the rainbow, gone the dove, you're saying, the rainbow and the dove, I see them. And that's what we're celebrating today. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
Amen. Well said. Dan in Detroit, we're down to about a minute and a half here, I think. Dan?
Yeah, hey, real fast, just want to say God bless all you guys. Mr. Yarrow, I met you in 99 down at the Detroit Opera House when you and Paul and Mary came to celebate the Israel 50th anniversary there at the Detroit Opera House. And way back in 1979, I went out to eat with you guys. You and Mary, we went down to the Fox and Hound restaurant with a group of people. You were playing at the Royal Oak Music Theater there. No, the Birmingham Theater in Birmingham back in 79. And just want to say thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for the music for all these years. And a good song to go out with would be Times Are Changing, because they truly are. Yeah. And hopefully for the better. And, sir, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the songs that you, Peter, Paul and Mary have sung over the decades. You're fantastic. You're great. And your daughter sounds wonderful. And, Mr. Hartman, you keep up the good work. You folks are doing a great job.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for listening to us on WDTW there in Detroit. Stephanie, is it possible for us to go out with this song instead of the normal bumper out? How much time do we have? Okay, we have 2 minutes. Great. Okay, here we go.
Send it to what?
Woke up this morning with my mind.
Oh, yeah, we will. Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Who let Bobby in the studio? Don't stand in the doorway. Don't block up the hallway. For he that gets hurt will be he who is stalled. There's a battle outside and it's raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls, for the times, they are a change. They have been changing. I woke up this morning with my mind flowed. It was set
on freedom.
Oh, I woke up this morning with my mind.
It was set
on freedom. I woke up this morning.
We still have 30 seconds.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
I'm going to let it shine.
This light of mine,
I'm going to let it shine.
This light of mine.
We're sending out prayers to Odetta now.
Let it shine.
She's going to let it shine.
Let it shine.
We're going to let it shine.
OperationRespect.org. Peter Yarrow, Bethany Merrill. Don't forget, democracy begins with you.